glad to be here at Ballywater Moy Conference again and wish to thank the brethren for their kind invitation. I also would like to make an apology for the fact that immediately after I speak, I will have to leave the meeting. I didn't think when I took on the engagement that things would work out that way, but circumstances prevail. There's another commitment. So if you forgive me, I believe that I'll be the loser for not being able to hear and listen to the ministry of our brethren. And I appreciate their fellowship and flexibility in allowing me to speak first and trust that the Lord's blessing, help and presence will be known to the end of the day. Now I'd like to read first of all from the book of Genesis and chapter 45. Genesis chapter 45. I have a number of quite familiar scriptures to read just for a practical little word. Genesis 45. Verse 9. Haste ye and go up to my father and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. Verse 24. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed, and he said unto them, See that ye fall not out by the way. And they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob, their father, and so on. Now, in the book of Deuteronomy, for a short reading, chapter 24, first of all. Deuteronomy and chapter 24. Verse 8, Deuteronomy 24 and verse 8. Take heed in the plague of leprosy that thou observe diligently, and do according to all that the priests, the Levites, shall teach you. As I commanded them, so ye shall observe to do. Remember what the Lord thy God did unto Miriam by the way, after that ye were come forth out of Egypt. Now you just across a page to the next chapter, chapter 25. And verse 17. Remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way when you were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about, in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget it. Now, over to the book of Ezra and chapter 8. Book of Ezra and chapter 8. Ezra chapter 8, this is the journey back from Babylon, back to Jerusalem, for the revival of the worship. Verse 21 of Ezra 8. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river of Ahava, that we might afflict ourselves before our God, to seek of him a right way for us, and for our little ones, and for all our substance. For I was ashamed to require of the king a band of soldiers and horsemen to help us against the enemy in the way, because we had spoken unto the king, saying, The hand of our God is upon all them for good that seek him, and so on. And then in those verse 24 and 25 of these vessels, 26 and 27, verse 28, I said unto them, Ye are holy unto the Lord, the vessels are holy also. Verse 30, so took the priests and the Levites the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem unto the house of our God. Then we departed from the river of Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go unto Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was upon us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and of such as lay in wait by the way. And we came to Jerusalem and abode there 3 days. Now in the 4th day was the silver and the gold and the vessels weighed in the house of our God and by the individuals. Now the New Testament, 2 short readings, the Gospel of Mark and chapter 9. Mark's Gospel and chapter 9. verse 31. Mark 9, verse 31. For he taught his disciples and said unto them, The Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men, and they shall kill him, and after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day. But they understood not that saying, and were afraid to ask him. And he came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them, What was it that ye disputed among yourselves by the way? But they held their peace, for by the way they had disputed among themselves, who should be the greatest? And he sat down and called the 12, and saith unto them, If any man desire to be first, the same shall be last of all and servant of all. And he took a child and set him in the midst of them. Now finally, the Gospel by Luke, chapter 24. Luke's Gospel, chapter 24. Verse 13, And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem, about 80 furlongs, and they walked to talk together of all these things which had happened. And then, as we know, the Lord joins the little company. And verse 32, And they said one to another, Did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the Scriptures? And that'll do for our reading. I've read some familiar passages. You know that some of these passages, at least, are employed by our brethren for single messages, and profitably so. I'm not going to do that. There's just a point or two from each one that I want to mention this afternoon. One of the things that I hear coming up for constant comment in these days concerns the dangers on the road. People constantly say, maybe when you're just sitting around chatting, well, you're taking your life in your hand. And you hardly mention the traffic on the roads, the volume of traffic or the speed of traffic, until you begin to hear one tale after another of some near miss, or some sad accident, or some close shave, something that has happened just along the way. As we are traveling these days, you see the wreckage of a car, and you look upon the tangled mass, and you know behind that there's a story, and maybe not a very good story. Just across the border, many of you will know that here and there along the roads, you'll come on a great big sign with a black spot in the middle of a whiteboard. And it will say, Accident Black Spot. At other places on the road, they'll have up a notice to tell you how many fatalities they had in such a year, and how many there were last year. And we all know that very sadly, our own little province, it has an amazing record in the first third of this year, both of casualties and fatalities along the way. You see all the dangers, just as I have. People that are not in the right lane, and they're moving over, changing sides. People that are going too quick and trying to get out in front of everyone else and taking a chance to do it. People that are too fast, people that are too slow, people that are careless, people that are dangerous. The difficulties on the roads are very great, and we don't minimize them. But then there's another road. You know, traveling on the road of life is not easy. And traveling along the road of testimony is not easy either. You might have noticed that in these scriptures that we have read together, we have the constant recurrence of the little expression, by the way. By the way. And what I want to try and do, briefly and very, very simply and practically, is just to draw your attention at the start of the meeting this afternoon to a number of difficulties and dangers that can take place along the way. Along the road. By the way. We're all pilgrims. I'll not go through the five passages now because it would take up time, but we'll maybe group them together later. But I say this. The path to heaven is not an easy path. The path home is a way on which better travelers than any of us here have stumbled and fallen. There are many difficulties. Some of them obvious, perhaps some of the more sinister difficulties unseen. And by the way, can present a challenge for many different travelers. Well, although there are difficulties, just before I get to that, maybe I should say this. It's a great mercy we're on the way. Oh, it's not an easy way. It's not a popular way. It has its potholes and its pitfalls. But there's one thing sure. Each one of us here not so long ago, we were traveling in a very dangerous way. Going down to dark damnation and eternal doom. It was broad and easy traveling for much of the road, and it was exceedingly popular. But we will never cease to praise the God of all grace that took our feet from that road and put them on the alternative track. We're on the way to glory. I think it was one of our own poets. This is not the Bible, but it's one of our own poets. It was Robert Louis Stevenson. He said in one of his works that to travel hopefully is a better thing than to arrive. To travel, hopefully, is a better thing than to arrive. Behind that expression, I suppose, Stevenson had the idea that a journey has always a certain amount of mystery to it. You never know what will be around the next corner. You never know what the next bend or the next mile will bring. And there's always a sense of excitement and anticipation with a journey. But once you arrive, well, you've got there. You've got to the end of it. And so said he. To travel, hopefully, is a better thing than to arrive. As Christians, we can travel, hopefully. We're assured not altogether of an easy pathway, but we are assured of a safe arrival at a glorious destination. Indeed, I don't think that Stevenson's word will prove true for us. Because I have within my little heart the thought that the arrival will even be greater than the journey. When we arrive, well, will we ever cease traveling? Tell me, Christian friend. Will we ever cease traveling? I'm inclined to think that we travel on earth. But even on the other side, we'll travel in eternity. And we'll move along a long line that will explore in never-ending corridors and avenues the deep recesses of fathomless and exhaustless deity. We'll be traveling deeper into the discoveries of the being of God. Thank God that journey will have its eternal ecstasy and exhilaration. Traveling in eternity will be traveling in a sphere beyond danger. Until we reach that eternal journey, to travel on earth will always be fraught with problems and with pitfalls. Now let me come to these four or five little references that we have read and make note of one or two things in them. It rather takes us by surprise when you're reading Genesis chapter 45, and we all know it's a marvelous chapter. It's one of those very, very touching chapters of the Bible. And you read down its pages and you begin with Joseph revealing himself to his brethren, sending out all the Egyptians. I am Joseph. The tears flow from his eyes, pent up in a heart of forgiveness. He puts his kiss of reconciliation on the cheek of these men. He gives them garments. He says, go and tell the old man of all the glory that I have in the land of Egypt. He shows them the wagons. He sends them on their... It's a great chapter. It's full of felicity and forgiveness. And the atmosphere is charged with excitement. And then just as they're going out, he says, boys, watch it you don't fall out by the way. And you say, that's a come down. You see, after all the great things that we have read about in this chapter, after all these great matters that have held us in suspense and have thrilled us, here there's something. Just the last word of Joseph to these men as they leave him and go on their... He says, now watch, boys, you don't fall out by the way. But you say, that's a very ordinary exhortation. That's something very prosaic. That's something very, very much down to earth. It doesn't seem to fit in. Well, you would think that if you didn't know human nature. But you know, I think, dear brethren and sisters, one of the big problems for us and one of the big problems for those men is just to be very, very careful that we don't needlessly fall out along the road. See that ye fall not out by the way. When I take a second look at this, of course, first of all, it surprises me that something so ordinary should come into such a glorious chapter. But then when I take a second look at it, I'm not really so much surprised, because I reckon that Joseph knew the man to whom he was talking. He knew that they were men could have some fierce squabble. When he was a boy, what, 20 years or whatever it was before this, 20 years or so before this, I think as a boy, Joseph had heard some of their shocking disputations. He even carried some of that evil report home to his father. He heard their argument. He knew their bitterness. He knew their jealousy. He knew the grudges that they could carry. He knew what they were. I said, listen, man, he said, I know your personality. And he said, just before you go back up to my father to give the good news to him, he says, I want you to be very careful that you don't have a bus stop along the road. But he said, I know that you're a very argumentative bunch. And he said, take Simeon, and take Reuben, and take Judah. He said, the three of them put together could create a war any time. He said, see that ye fall not out by the way. Well, dear brethren, I don't want to be too negative, not at all, but I'll say this. We have had some tremendous rows along the way, haven't we? How many people, well, maybe we shouldn't even think about it. I don't want to dwell upon it too long. But you know, there were quite a number that used to maybe sit happily with us. They're not here today. They weren't here last year. It's not that they were put out. But you know, many of them have gone because they had a falling. Some piece of dissension, some piece of just carnal conflict, some personality clash. And they fell out. Oh, Joseph had put on them lovely coats. But he knew that behind those nice new coats there were still hearts. It's great for us to appreciate the change that conversion has brought and the change that reconciliation has brought, because as you know, that's the subject of chapter 45. But we need to remember that beneath it all, we have hearts that have the potential to be disruptive, argumentative, to be hostile to good fellowship. And I think it would be a salutary little exhortation for us this afternoon. See that ye fall not out by the way. If, just supposing, I think actually one of the reasons why Joseph was so concerned about this was simply, if they had arrived up with Jacob at 6 and 7 and started to tell Jacob some of the good news, and though Jacob would scratch his head and he would take a look at them, he would say, now, if they really have had this blessing that they talk about, you would wonder they wouldn't be getting on better. And he would say to himself, now, can you believe them? I've heard what they told me. They told me the good news that Joseph is still alive. He said, I have heard their story. But he says, do you see the way they're fighting? He says, I'm beginning to wonder if there's anything to their story or not. He says, they don't seem to have changed. I have wondered, brethren, is one of the reasons why we have trouble getting people to believe our story. They listen to what we say, but they look at how we behave, and they scratch their head, and they say, well, well. If that's what Christianity produces, if that's what a knowledge of the Lord of all produces, there must be something strangely wrong. See that ye fall not out by the way. It was a bumpy road. Joseph knew it wasn't a tarmac road. Joseph knew that if these men in any way get into problems, the likelihood is that they'll begin to rake up the past and start blaming one for this and blaming another for that. And he says, now listen, he says, that's all forgiven. He says, forget about that. He says, if I have forgiven that, he said, don't you be raking that up to create problems and to cause an unnecessary fallout. See that ye fall not out by the way. That's all I say on that, brethren and sisters. You know exactly what I have in mind. We are embarrassed at times by some of the disruptions, by some of the dissensions that we create by our own. And it's not a matter of covering sin. No, it's not at all been brought out into the open. These boys had covered it long enough. Joseph had brought that out into the open. It had all been judged in the light of his presence. It had all received the pardon of his forgiveness. But now they were going on to a new stage in their life. And he says, see that ye fall not out by the way. Now the second one that I mentioned quickly is the third one actually that we read. In the book of Deuteronomy chapter 25, well, it's 40 years down the line. Moses is giving one of his last sermons. And he brings back to memory something that had happened all those years before this. He said, now, I don't want you to forget this. He says, remember how Amalek met you by the way. He said, just when you come out of Egypt. He says, you were just redeemed a short time. The taste of the manna was as sweet as honey in your palate. And he said, the water from the rock, it was still flowing down refreshingly into your being. You were just out of Egypt tasting God's blessings. And then he said, by the way. He said, nobody was watching for it. Nobody was thinking about it. He said, nobody was watching for it. Nobody was thinking about it. Nobody was expecting it. And he said, just as quick as lightning and as crafty as a serpent, he says, Amalek slipped in by the way. And he says, he seemed to deal a fatal blow to some of the travelers on that occasion. You know, I see, and it's great to see them. We were all in that position once, not so long ago. Great to see so many young believers here at Ballywater Moy Conference on a Saturday afternoon. It's great that you've left Egypt, that you're sheltered beneath the blood of the Lamb, that you're out on a path to a better destination. But remember, there is one thing that the enemy will seek to do in your early Christian experience that he never lets up. I'm not saying that the older ones have no temptations. We will all have temptations right until traveling days on earth are done, as we sing from time to time. But I'm saying this. The devil will do his best to inflict a blow upon you in the early stages of the journey that will have a crippling effect. Now he says, remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way when ye were come out of Egypt. I'm not going into all the details. Our brethren have oftentimes, and I have, in fact, I think maybe one of our brethren on the platform here, I heard him speak at a Ballywater Moy conference on the very subject of Exodus chapter 17, and I'm not going into it in detail. And our brethren could also prove to us very, very clearly that Amalek can be a picture of the flesh, that great enemy of all that is spiritual in a believer's life. And I think part of Moses' reason for mentioning it here was this. He says, now, Amalek is so thick. He says, I don't want you people to make the mistake of trusting him. He's too tricky to be trusted. He said, as long as you live, He said, never let Amalek be released from the edge of the sword. He says, don't forget what he did, by the way. And he touched some of... I'll mention that just in a second. Can I say this, brethren? We need to watch that we never trust the flesh. You know, the flesh is not the Christian's friend. And just as soon as I make an excuse for the flesh, and as soon as I give him a little bit of space and a little bit of room, it's just at that very time he can inflict a blow. The flesh. Now, I want to be straight. I want to be helpful to all here. I wonder, is there anyone in the meeting this afternoon, and you're giving space to some Amalek thing in your life? I'm not going to name things. I'm not going to do that. You can identify it. Something that's against God. Something that would hinder your progress as a Christian to the better land. Something that's there. And you're giving space to it. Now, I would just say, remember what Amalek did unto them. By the way. Now, I might add, without going into excessive detail, we're told, and Moses, we're not told this in Exodus, but in this reminder of Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 25, we're told that he managed to get those who were hindmost. Or maybe it's not altogether the people that were lagging away behind. There may be some, but I think he's talking about the fact that Amalek was able to get the people that were out on the edges. Some of those tribes that were camping on the periphery of things, they became an easy victim for Amalek's malicious attack, and he got them. Those in the center seem to be preserved. Very, very simple little principle, young believer. One of the great preservations, and it's not the only preservation, and it's not the ultimate preservation, but I would say this, one of the preservations of your life will be, make sure, to the best of your ability, that you get into the very middle of things for God. You know, I have noticed people, they stay on the edges. They come to a minimum of meetings. They do a minimum of Bible study. They just keep as close to the edge of the world as they can. They're still in the Christian camp, but they keep right out of the edge. Now, I tell you, to be a peripheral Christian, or a world borderer, or whoever you wanted to, I tell you, that's a very, very dangerous place to be. The ones that were on the edges, and they were feeble and weary. Now remember, you need to be very, very careful, because one of the times when the flesh will make his most sinister attack is when you're physically weary. I want to speak to some of the brethren here very plainly. You come home from a busy day's work. You're physically exhausted. You're mentally exhausted. The challenge of Bible study is just too much. You're down. You're drained. You're weary. I tell you, it's just then that you need to watch the flesh. But I don't feel like reading a chapter. I don't feel like getting down to pray. I'll slip onto the net. I'll do a little bit of private viewing. And before you know, you can just find yourself into something because you're physically weary. Now we must remember, we must learn ourselves. Once a Christian is down emotionally or physically, he needs to watch that Amalek doesn't just strike and leave him or her a casualty lying along the side of the way. I could mention men. I'm not going into that. Men in the Bible who were left just because Amalek struck a blow at an opportune moment for him, at an inopportune moment for them. And it was just, well, I'll leave it. Another event that Moses reminded these people of before he left them was in the previous chapter. He says, listen. He says, I not only want you to remember what Amalek did, by the way, but he says, I want you to remember what happened to Miriam, by the way. This is not now dissension, or this is not now disruption, falling out amongst each other. This is not giving way to the flesh, in that particular sense, but as far as Miriam was concerned, well, that was a sad day, wasn't it? Imagine that great lady, sister of Moses. I called her a great lady. That will just do fine. A great lady. And she's as leprous, white as snow. You see, what has happened? Why was that act of discipline executed by the Lord himself on such a noble person? Well, you know the story. We have been reading in Deuteronomy, but the story goes back to the book of Numbers, chapter 12. She had spoken against her brother because he had married an Ethiopian wife. Was that really the reason? Was that really the reason? I think if you read the chapter, you'll see that. Well, presumably Zipporah had joined Moses when he came out into the wilderness. Until she arrived, she had been away at home with her father. Or perhaps she was a new wife. It doesn't matter. But if she was away at home with her father, you know, Miriam, Moses' older sister, she had quite a position of prominence. But when Mrs. Moses arrived, well, can't you understand that big sister's nose was slightly pushed out? And she resented the new arrival. I was the most important lady around here, but now this lady has arrived, and she spoke against his wife. Spoke against him because he had marked. But really the problem was, she spoke against Moses. Was it a wee bit of jealousy? Was she piqued because of that? Slandering Moses a little bit. I'm not going into his attitude just now, but the Bible tells us that the Lord made Miriam leprous. As white as snow. That was a sad thing. You know, once ladies lose their tongue, well, I don't think I'll say too much more about this, or I need to leave even before I'm finished. But I will believe it anyway. I'll tell you, brethren, do you see, once a prominent lady begins to slander a leader, a godly leader in the assembly, she'll probably pick on something. But the real cause of discontent, 9 times out of 10, will lie elsewhere. The Lord heard it. That was the difficulty. The Lord heard it. Moses, with dignity, he carried just a demeanor of complete silence. The meekest man of all the earth, Numbers 12. The Lord heard it. I hope that we will watch, you know, along the way, fallouts, casualties because of Amalek. Hold up. That happened. Actually, it's very interesting. If we were going into finer details, that Aaron had to ask Moses to pray for her. And when Aaron was asking Moses to pray for her, he called Moses my Lord. Now, that was better. He said, Lord, pray that she might be healed, Moses. Moses prayed, she was healed. And the whole thing went on. No. God says, now, he says, I'll heal her right away. But he says, we're going to keep the camp up for 7 days. But Lord, if you healed her, and if you forgive her, let's go on. But, no, he says, listen. He says, we're going to stop for 7 days. But you say, Lord, don't let the discipline last too. No, he says, 7 days. Now, I don't think she was leprous for 7 days. But she was outside for 7 days. She was brought back in. Brethren, thank God, we do believe in restoration. But I would say this. We should be prepared to wait until discipline has its full effect. God kept the whole camp waiting for 7 days so that the nation might learn the seriousness of sin. If she had been stricken with leprosy on Monday, Moses prayed on Monday evening, she was back in on Tuesday, and everything went on normal, the people would say, that wasn't much of a hiccup. God said, I heal her, but will not move to next Monday. And as he thinks of that, he's just about to die. He says, remember what the Lord did unto Miriam, by the way. I'm glad, brethren, I'm glad that I can't remember too many occasions in the assembly where I break bread and the assembly into which I was received. I can't remember too many occasions of excommunication. But I'll tell you this. The few that there have been, I don't expect to forget them in a hurry. Serious, solemn occasion. God says, remember what happened by the way. So that he said the whole nation might learn that in God's camp, sin is not something that can be glossed over. Sin is not something that can be tolerated lightly. And discipline is something that must be allowed to take its full course, by the way. I'll mention these two very, very quickly, and then I'll stop. That's a lovely passage indeed. I think I maybe try to say a word or two in a slightly different connection on it. The last time I was at the conference here in Ezra chapter 8, the men are bringing up the vessel from Babylon back up to Jerusalem, those vessels that will be so useful in the temple. They haven't a military escort. And Ezra tells us, he said, before we started out, he said, we held a prayer meeting. And he said, we asked the Lord to keep us because of the enemy that was lying in wait by the way. By the way. He said, there was a route that we had to travel. I'll just mention what I have in mind quickly, and you can fill in the details. First of all, Ezra thinks about the wealth they carry. Oh, he says, these are wealthy vessels. Vessels for the house of God. The wealth they carry. Then he thinks about the way they traveled. Those 900 miles over some of it very, very difficult terrain. Now he says, we are entrusted with the custody of these vessels. And he says, we have to carry them over that difficult. And then he thinks about the wild that are lying in wait. He said, their enemies along that road would take these vessels from us. And he said, if we don't carry these vessels carefully, he says, we could lose them. And once we get to the house at the other side, we'll be the poorer. But he said, we have weakness in ourselves. We cannot defend it in our own strength. And so he just calls upon God for his help. And he says, when we got to the end of the journey, he says, we had to praise the good hand of the Lord that had been upon us by the way. Now, I'm just saying, as I abbreviate my remarks on this and come to a close on the final one. Dear brethren and sisters, we carry vessels. Treasures of truth and testimony. I'm talking very simply about the likes of the simple remembrance meeting. The straightforward Bible reading. The straightforward gospel meeting. The prayer meeting. I think that each of those and others that I could mention, they could be described as vessels that have been used for the promotion and the propagation of testimony. And I trust that the Lord will help us to hold them as exceedingly valuable, because I believe, I'm not a negative person, I'm not a critic at all, I believe that there are very sinister elements along the road. And some of the valuable things of assembly testimony that have come down to us as a heritage from a previous generation, if we do not treat them as a thrust, some of those enemies would launch an ambush. Take some of these things from us. Leave us the poorer. Ezra said, we were men. We had to pray to God. And he said, we moved with vigilance, conscious of our weakness, conscious of the wealth, conscious of the way. Says, conscious of the wiles of the enemy that would remove these things. They were lying in wait, by the way. The Apostle Paul had them lying in wait. You remember he spoke about men that came in to spy and so on. I'll not go into those details. May God help us to watch that we don't lose some of the valuables along the way. For I think there are some things, whether they're being sold, I'm not so sure, whether they're being bartered and bargained, whether they're being dropped through carelessness, I'm not altogether sure. but may the Lord help us to hold our trust of treasure and testimony for his glory. Finally, well, that's the favorite way of all, I suppose. The Emmaus Road. Our brethren have spoken about it so often, I'll mention it very quickly. It was a way of sorrow. Unexplained sorrow. We would just for 5 seconds drop in quietly beside those two. It says they talked about the things that had happened. I would say, if I was able to get into some of the homes of the believers here, maybe tonight, maybe last night, maybe the night before, some of you believers have spent many a long hour just talking about the things that have happened. Now, you wish they didn't happen, but they happened. You would rather it had been, but they've happened. You just talk about the things that have happened. I appreciate, I noticed some of the manuscripts and some of the translations, it says that this road was 7 miles. The Bible doesn't say that. The Bible says that this road of sorrow was 60 furlongs. When God's people try the path of sorrow, God doesn't measure the mile. He measures the furlong. Because every stage counts. When the Savior arrived on the scene, I'm jumping over many details, it tells us that as he began to converse, listen to the story of these two travelers, it says that he opened up to them in all the scriptures. Oh, he says, now friends, I want to tell you there's a bigger story, you know. They had focused on some of the scriptures. He said, I want you to think about all of the scriptures. And it tells us that he spoke about beginning at Moses and all the prophets. He says there's a bigger picture. And he said there's a bigger story. And he said, I want to tell you that everything that has happened, it's just part of a bigger program that's exactly according to God's plan. You know, God has no plan B. I saw in one of the papers yesterday, they had a great plan for some of these great companies, and they have plan B. Brethren and sisters, God has no plan B. Because his first plan is perfect. The Savior told these people that everything's part of a bigger plan, and everything's part of a bigger picture. And he said, you'll have to take it more comprehensively. And maybe there's some Christian here as I stop tonight, and you have been treading a very lonely path and a very sorrowful path. Maybe you just can't understand the things that have happened. Can I say to you, as from the lips of Christ, that there is a larger story, and there is a perfect plan. And even though you may not realize it, as these ones did not realize it, when they got to the end of the journey, they discovered that the Lord had been with them for far more furlongs than they realized. They thought he wasn't there at all. He was with them all the time. Maybe when we get to the end of the journey, we will see the path from a different standpoint and see that when we thought he was absent, he was actually there. And he was making the scriptures more real. And he was making himself more precious as they marched along every stage. And they said, did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us? By the way, I'm stopping. There are dangers along the way. May the Lord preserve the feet of us all. And grant as this conference goes on, and our brethren minister, I trust with abundant help from the Lord. I trust that you believers will be able to go out through the doors, take our journeys home. And you'll say we went to Ballywater and why. And from 6 o'clock until the end of the day, he talked with us. By the way, it's a tricky path. May the Lord preserve our feet till we reach the golden shore.
I wonder if they sang one verse of number 501. All the way my Savior lead me. What have I to ask beside? Can I doubt his tender mercy? Who through life has been my guide. Heavenly peace, divinest comfort, here by faith in him to dwell. For I know whatever before me, Jesus doeth all things well. Verse 1, standing please, I'll rest us.